Welcome in all to the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Give it a like, give it a subscribe. I'm Chase Goodbread, the Tuscaloosa News sports columnist, along with Travis Ryer, longtime Alabama reporter, analyst, etc., and the purveyor of all sorts of great sports content on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to check that out here on Talking Tide. Of course, Alabama, we hit on all things Crimson Tide, football, and basketball at this time of year. Got to start with basketball, Travis. Of course, the SEC tournament upcoming. Alabama just closed out the regular season with an absolutely huge win. And it's going to be a wild tournament. It's been pretty historic, at least in modern college basketball history, this year that the league has had as a whole. And when you look at the SEC tournament, you see four teams one locked into a number one seed in the NCAA tournament in Auburn, three others maybe with a shot at a one. That's something.
I think you could make an argument for all four number one seeds. Mm-hmm. The ACC, it makes its ears bleed. I understand that. I think Duke is a really good team. I've been impressed with the way they've taken care of their business in an otherwise really weak ACC, most recently with the win on the road in Chapel Hill over rival North Carolina. But, man, you know, would you really have that much of an argument if you said we're going Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Tennessee as one seeds? I mean, you would have an argument because it would
you could argue
the country. But legitimacy of those four teams is potential one seeds. And let's put it this way. If they're not all four ones and you're a one, do you want one of these as the two in your region?
Right, right. Yeah. It's as deep as it could be, no question about it. Travis, what about an over-under on, of course, Alabama has got that late game on Friday, which is the quarterfinals. Alabama, of course, one of four teams with a double bye. They're going to scoot in there as the last of four games of the day on Friday. Travis, what's the over-under on tip-off time for the Crimson Tide playing that late game that, of course, always seems to drag past the expected or hoped for time?
Well, you think about the potential for overtime in those quarterfinal games on Friday night, starting with Auburn and potentially Ole Miss in a quarterfinal. What if Cal goes on a little bit of a run for a couple of rounds with the Razorbacks and you get Auburn and Arkansas in a matchup early on Friday? Then you look at the potential for Tennessee against Texas A&M or maybe even a Vanderbilt in the afternoon game. Then earlier in the evening, Florida, maybe Missouri in a quarterfinal. I mean, it's just going to be great basketball action. And it's typically been referred to as the Big Blue Invitational. And, you know, in a lot of years, you really needed Kentucky to kind of get to that final game, get to that championship game to keep people interested, keep people around for the duration of this. Not this year, though, Chase.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been huge. I think Kentucky is as much of an afterthought in this particular SEC tournament as I can ever remember in my lifetime. I'm prone to forgetting about a year or two when I make statements like that, Travis. But geez, you know, when's the last time they were this far down the totem pole going into an SEC tournament year? Not often. I know.
No. Again, it's Big Blue Invitational a lot of years. But boy, Nate Oates has had something to do with that. You look at the coaching roster in the Southeastern Conference right now. And you think about where's Cal on that list now that he's at Arkansas. Bruce Pearl is your SEC coach of the year. He's certainly had something to do with that. Rick Barnes, even some of the more recent changes like Todd Golden at Florida. It seems like about a 5 or 6 year stretch. Dennis Gates been a little bit up and down at Missouri. Looks like Vanderbilt may have a little something going now with their latest change. So, that roster has got a lot to do with making life a lot tougher for Kentucky. That being said, won't be surprised to see Kentucky there Friday night taking on Alabama if it works out that way. And I think it's could still be a hell of a matchup.
You expect the SEC to break the record for most teams to go to the tournament in a, from a conference. That record, of course, being 2011 Big East with 11.
Yes.
And it's a fair comparison because the Big East in 2011 had 16 teams, just like the SEC, right?
Yep, you're right. And so when you look at it right now, just in terms of the teams, the eight teams that we know either have a bye or a double bye, you know those eight are in. So right. You get into those first round teams. Who are you going to keep out? I think Arkansas's in at this point. I think Vanderbilt's in. That's 10. I think Mississippi State, as much as it has struggled here down the stretch, is in. That's 11. Then you kind of get into Oklahoma, Georgia,
Texas.
You
know,
Texas. Yeah, those teams are where you would think you'd get a 12th. I know in some bracketologies with Joe Lenardi of ESPN, not that long ago, we've seen 13 SEC teams in. So right now I'm inclined to go with the over there, Chase.
I am too. I definitely like Oklahoma's resume over Texas's. Oklahoma's got three quad one non-conference wins. Texas has zero. And Oklahoma just beat Texas at Texas to finish the regular season.
Yeah.
So give me the Sooners if it comes out of those two.
Yeah, you would think so, but boy, you said it. It's going to be an absolutely crazy midweek and weekend as you get into that SEC tournament in a great spot for it. Nashville is where that thing should be contested year in, year out. I know it's moved around in past years, but that's a great spot for it. I think for the women, Greenville has been great from that standpoint, kind of like Hoover with baseball or football in Atlanta. Some really good spots for some of these SEC championships.
All right, Travis, to the Crimson Tide's last game. Of course, they went down to Auburn, knocked them off 93-91 in overtime. I wasn't down there due to a personal matter, but at the later that night, I was able to catch the full replay. And wow, what a finish! I believe I was able to avoid any spoilers as far as how it finished until I actually got to see it later that night, which was hard to do when you live in this state. What a floater to end it at the buzzer.
Absolutely. Mark Sears, and you heard Nate talk about it post game. Aesthetically, it's not a play that you're going to see at a lot of maybe coaches' clinics in terms of guys or Nate getting up on the whiteboard and kind of drawing it up how it went down. But as he said too, ultimately what was right about the play was that it got to the right guy in Mark Sears and kind of a mid-range shot, which isn't a favorite either of Nate Oates, but I think he'll be okay with this one. That was a hell of a teardrop and give some other guys a lot of credit too. Guys that needed to battle like Grant Nelson, Amori, some of those guys came up big and in some clutch spots. I still think LeBaron Filon is the guy that you just need to go ahead and ride with as your primary ball handler, guy on the ball. Yes, I think there's still very much a place for Aiden Holloway as kind of a swing guard there as well when you think about Filon and Sears and Holloway. But, boy, Grant Nelson, heroic in so many ways. It really takes his, it seems like, and this team's level to an even higher place when he's able to just make a couple of threes and then do all the other things he does. And he went 3 of 6 from three and had a posterization of Cardwell on the dunk.
He did indeed,
broke out the little crimson crane. That didn't go over well, but for Alabama, I think it was critical, maybe even more so from a psychological perspective, Chase, to close out a game like that with a win because they hadn't done it. They didn't do it the previous week in Knoxville. So, boy, a team that looked like it could be wandering into the abyss a little bit, although the schedule was so difficult. Alabama hadn't played really poorly, but you still got to win games. You got to win games like that one to feel like you can do it coming up here in the postseason.
Sure. Back to the Sears floater for a second. I thought that you mentioned it was mid-range. Oates likes to pseudo count floaters as rim shots at the rim, right?
Still in the paint.
But that one was outside the floater range. I don't think there's any question. Good thing for Sears, though, he was able to get it to his strong side, that left side, to get the left-handed shot off, right?
That's where the design worked. It got him going downhill to the left, right?
No question about it. Money shot there. By the way, turnover is a problem for Sears down the stretch in the SEC season. How about one turnover for him combined last two games? None against Florida, one against Auburn, and seven assists, by the way, against the Tigers. I think he's the last two games, I think he's 12 assists, one turnover.
Only took nine shots in the game. But when you're facilitating scoring via assists like he did, you know, that's something you can live with. And, you know, look, it wasn't an extensive rotation in this game either. I mean, it played nine guys, but maybe one of the biggest, literally and figuratively, all of the posts were big for Alabama in this game. And that sounds a little weird because Broome goes for 34 on 15 of 28 field goals for the Auburn Tigers. But they got a lot of Broome, but their bigs, I guess you could say, Chase, helped them from getting swept. Because you look at Nelson's 23, you look at Amori's 15, Sherrill with 8, including 3 of 3 from the field, 7 rebounds, 8 rebounds for Amori, Nelson with 8 rebounds. So you got 23 of your 41 rebounds from guys that you really need it from.
Yeah, Morey, 7 of 7 from the floor. I think all of those were certainly layups or dunks. And he was very effective, 8 rebounds for him. He was a presence inside like he hadn't been in a while. Nelson, of course, 23 and 8. Another fact thing about Nelson, only 2 turnovers for Nelson in 35 minutes of action, right? You take that all day. The issue with Nelson down the stretch, you know, over the second half of the SEC schedule, to me, primarily was sometimes he'd give you 2 turnovers before the under 16, you know, and I think, you know, maybe that's why there have been some slow starts during that part of the schedule too. But in this game, he just exploded. Reminds you a little bit about that 24 and 12 he put on UNC in the NCAA tournament. Every once in a while, he just goes off.
He does, and I think it's a good point you make about this team feels kind of like last year's team. You know, you can say one way or another if it's a better team than last year's team. But last year's team in the tournament, Chase, it seemed like every round, especially as they got deeper in that Final Four run, it was somebody else kind of every game. Maybe it was Estrada one game. Maybe it was Grant one game. It was Jaren Stevenson for sure in one of those games.
It was Diabate in the game.
It was Sears. And it feels like that's the way it's going to be if this team makes that kind of run again. It's probably going to be somebody else every game. That's not to say they don't have a superstar in Mark Sears, and he certainly came up big when they needed him the most there in overtime on Saturday. But it is a little bit of a by committee approach, it feels like. And so, again, psychologically, you like that for this team. You have your senior night ruined by Florida midweek. You go on a road and you ruin your rival's senior day.
Yeah, that Florida game, boy, the Gators played well.
Gators are a great team, man. That's a tough team. That team, you know, I thought Auburn was maybe a little UConn-ish from last year or the last 2 years. I think Florida might be, because whereas they've got guys that can come up big in individual sort of situations, Chase, whether it's Walter Clayton or any of those guys, I think they're able to get more out of their stuff, their system, than they are from just a one-on-one individual perspective. They got guys that can do that, don't get me wrong. But that was the thing about UConn to me, even last year, was it came down to it. Their stuff was really hard to guard, and they weren't as dependent on maybe individual work as they were. If they needed it, they could get it from, you know, their ball action and their stuff that they run.
Yeah, Clayton, especially for Florida, Travis, the range on that guy is 3-point. He's got Sears range.
And they all seem okay with everybody getting theirs, which is so critical, man.
Yeah.
That dynamic, again, I think Alabama's kind of that team too. I think Auburn's kind of that team. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. The teams you worry about, you know, are teams that, I still worry about Tennessee, though, offensively, you know, because the way they play, they love the rock fights. But, boy, if they get a game in the 70s, they could go at any time.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. All right, Travis, we'll turn to football for the back end of the show now. Of course, Alabama on spring break. They've got 20% of spring practice in the books, I guess, 3 out of 15.
You're the math guy. Yeah.
That's not good for us.
We didn't get into this stuff because we're mathematicians, right?
That's right, right. Yeah. 6 credit hours of math for me to get an undergraduate degree.
The reason why in press boxes they give you the stats, you know, because the guys and gals up there maybe aren't so good at figuring all that out.
No question about it. But again, 12 more practices to go. They'll resume, I think, on Monday the 17th. Travis, quarterbacks obviously top of mind. Ty Simpson, Austin Mack, Keelan Russell, the freshman coming in as an early enroller. I'll say this, you know, people talk about having four, needing four, and how dangerous it might be to have your number three be, you know, suddenly your number two. From a reps standpoint in spring practice, and reps is what it's all about in the spring, those guys are going to get more throws each.
And Ryan Grubb's going to get more of an opportunity to watch the guys, right, that are legitimately in that mix, rather than if you have five guys and you know you really only have two and a half that are legitimately in a competition. So I think of it almost like NFL free agency, which we know got underway today with the legal tampering period. You saw so many signings or agreements that were come to, you know, you go through spring practice, and if you're down to two, you go to free agency and you find that sort of journeyman, maybe even if you have to, or maybe one or two, and you give yourself that extra quarterback, that three or that four, and maybe a JUCO comes on the radar late, something like that. And you deal with the numbers that way these days, it seems like.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, Grubb was asked about the quarterbacks, of course. It'd be the only time he speaks publicly in the spring, as a matter of fact. And you know, he obviously had some positive words for Simpson from a leader in the room type standpoint, right? Knows more, been around the program a lot more. Mack was interesting too for Grubb, because Grubb coached Mack for a year at Washington, right? When he was there, yep, as a 17-year-old who was redshirting.
I think he evaluated him, you know,
to no bring question. Him in. Yeah, so, you know, his catch up on him, he just felt like Mack had grown into his body a little bit more, you know, felt like he'd kind of tightened some things up mechanically, which he needed to do. It's one of the reasons he redshirted. You know, and as far as Russell, he's learning. It's about all you're going to get out of Ryan Grubb on any of a freshman, and that's fine. That's good.
I liked what Grubb said about multiple young guys in that regard, watching that. Media availability that you were a part of with Grubb. And I think he was asked about AK Deer, maybe at the running back position, you know, look, young guy, it is what it is, especially at positions where there's more to it than just carrying the football. Like there is for AK Deer, there's pass protections. There's, you know, what can you do as a receiver? Can you catch the football? What sort of depth do you have as a route runner? We all know the story about Derrick Henry going from Yulee High School to Alabama. He had no clue about that, those parts, even Derrick Henry. So, I thought Grubb was pretty enlightening, maybe more so in some of the things he didn't say about some of the guys. But, you know, you kind of anticipate it. Ty Simpson should be ahead when that thing gets going, and, you know, kind of get back to me when we get into more teamwork, more scrimmage work.
I think one of the positive things for Alabama as they got things started off, Travis, was that when they ticked off that list of injuries at the beginning of the spring, these guys are going to be out, these guys are going to be limited. Never heard Adam Cole's name. And that injury he had that knocked him out for the year last year was no joke. And he was kind of coming into his own before that happened.
Yeah, Cole Adams is kind of a guy that's, you know, sneaky important in an offense, especially one that you know, isn't going to be afraid to let the quarterback kind of run the show in terms of the passing game. So, you know, he had, I know Kobe Prentice has moved on, but you think about it at the time that Cole kind of went out, he was, I thought, clearly the number three, probably, you know, with Jeremy Bernard Ryan. If they were an 11 personnel, you kind of expected to see, you got to the point where you expected to see seven out there. But it's good to hear some positive things in regards to Jalen Hale too, in regards to his return from injury. And Latsier Brooks, some of the young guys coming in there trying to make a strong impression earlier. Rico Scott is a guy I don't think you want to overlook here moving forward. So Isaiah Horton coming in from the transfer portal. You get the sense they feel okay about the talent they have right now at wide receiver. It's just kind of seeing how it all plays out after your top two guys.
The area where they're thinnest got to be tackle or tight end. Those two, those are the two, right? I mean, you, especially with Caden Proctor being, I think, on the limited list, right, for spring practice. Yeah. And they're moving Oleus on and out there, I think, to tackle to give him a look on the outside. Geno Vandermark apparently has been working at Tyler Booker's left guard spot, Travis. But boy, between the tackle position and tight end, where you're really only bringing back Quavis in terms of legit game experience, they're thin both of those spots.
Yeah, and we both know, doing this as long as we have, so many of these guys have tackle backgrounds. It's almost like the best high school tackles end up at programs like Alabama. And then they're not all going to play tackle. So that's when you start to see a paring down of more to guard, center, those type of things. You figured Vandermark, with his experience, as much as we saw him last year, especially as Jaden sort of worked through some of those injuries, would be in a prime position going into this spring with Jaden back at the one guard, Brailsford at center. But Alainen's one of those guys. Olas played guard. He's played guard, played tackle in high school. Casey Poe, a similar guy, you know, another one of these tackle types in high school that has played some guard, you know, and they went to the transfer portal for a guy like Arkell Anuwum, previously, I guess, of what, Ball State. So, you know, he's in that mix too. The bottom line is you feel pretty certain that Caden Proctor is going to be right back in there at left tackle. I've said, I think it's a big off season for Caden. So I don't think it's a situation where you can just sort of, feel great about him not being fully go this time of year. But at the end of the day, he's going to be one of your two tackles. It's Wilkin Formby or one of these other guys, you know, trying to figure out who that next guy is going to be.
No doubt. On the defensive side of the ball, Travis, Kane Womack was, I enjoy just in general, compared to Sheridan, especially last year, Womack's more fun to talk to, for sure. And, you know, he was asked about a couple of young guys. Said Dre Kirk's been working some at the Husky, and likes how the young defensive back has been looking there. Keon Keeley, a name he mentioned as well, as a guy he feels like was an up-and-come. Wasn't asked about him, knew. He unprompted, he mentioned Keeley, which struck me a little bit because, Travis, you know, they brought in Kelby Collins, right, for that bandit position. I know he's been playing inside and outside, but between Overton coming back, right, and what you got coming back with Collins coming in from Florida, et cetera.
Latham.
Yeah. It's a crowded field for Keeley to be even trying to stand out in.
Yeah, a lot of Alabama fans, you know, they're ready to see it. Because he was a five-star coming out of high school. Now, he was a five-star that was projected at a totally different position, too. He was projected more at like a jack linebacker, and that's not what he's being asked to do now in this defense. So, you know, I like the numbers. You know, I like guys like Edric Hill. I think for Overton, it's a money type year for him, potentially, because he was the king of the close sack a year ago. Got there close a lot of times, as we talked about. Needs to finish on the quarterback more this time around. I'm sure he understands that.
Got a little Aries Monroe in him in that regard. Remember Aries Monroe was a Mr. Almost got it, you know.
But I like guys like Edric Hill and Jordan Renaud and Jeremiah Beeman. You know, with James Smith pretty much limited, I guess, or out this spring, you know that's going to be a guy to go with Tim Keenan. So, but it just feels like for 3 or 4 years or more now, we've talked about every year the potential of the Alabama defensive line. And right. for whatever reason, it hasn't necessarily translated to big numbers. Now, under Nick, part of that was by design. You know, I know Alabama fans would get up in arms about tackles for loss, sacks, hurries, things like that. But that defense really wasn't set up for that. This defense, I think they want to see more of that from their guys up front. It needs to happen here pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, you go 2-gap to 1-gap, you're going to need more penetration, TFLs, et cetera. Yep. Womack mentioned Monday, make creating more negative plays is one of our big next steps. And, you know, if you're not going to and in some cases, it can be hard on guys going from one style to the other, right? I mean, to me, in terms of body type, Tim Keenan is a 2-gapper, right?
He's a little chap. He's got some chapman to him.
So, maybe a little bit more difficult, more of an ask for him. And, of course, he's coming back as a senior and a big part of this defense and an effective part of this defense. But a bigger ask of him, maybe, Travis, to be more of a quick penetrator, as opposed to somebody else.
We saw more of that from James Smith down the stretch of last season, including against Michigan in the loss in Tampa. So, he would be the guy I would look to provide more of that from that perspective. But, hey, the more the merrier. So, Hill, Beeman, Renaud, any of these guys that want to jump in and sort of help in that regard, I know it would be welcomed for sure.
Should be a strong defense between what comes back and a couple of if the transfers deliver, Cam Calhoun at corner, obviously Nakai Hill-Green, who with Justin Jefferson limited physically in this spring, more reps, I would assume for Hill Green, not that he's got a ton of experience.
And probably he's got to be developing some of that chemistry with Womack and the defensive staff as a green dot candidate too. Right.
Right.
The guy who can call the defense with that veteran experience, and he brings some thump. You know, I think he brings some suddenness. I don't know if he's a guy who's going to be able to run the rail route with a back in man to man, as well as a Deontay Lawson has done in the past. But just based on even who's not available this spring, the addition of him looks like a good one.
Yeah, his best game is his downhill game. I don't think there's any question about that. But experience-wise, you mentioned the green dot. I believe he green dotted for Colorado last year. Yeah. So shouldn't be any adjustment for him, certainly.
You know, I like Caden Jones. He's a guy that no one talks about as a young linebacker, and I don't know. I mean, maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't. But I saw him as a freshman last year on a lot of special teams. Mm-hmm. And he's 6'4", about 230, 235. He's kind of in between. He's between Deontay Lawson, Justin Jefferson, the older guys, and now he's between the young guys like Luke Metz and some of the others that they brought in here in this most recent class. But I still wouldn't sleep on Caden Jones. Just something about that guy. I think he's got a chance to be a pretty significant contributor. We'll see. But just looking at him on the practice field or when I've seen him in games, he looks like an Alabama linebacker to me.
One to watch. Alabama, once again, 12 more spring practices to go. They'll be coming off of spring break next week to get things restarted. That is going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. Talk to you next time right here on Talking Tide.